mic up here. Sorry about that. I thought something was missing. All right. Hi, everybody, and welcome to The Life of an Entrepreneur. I'm Jan McCarthy with Entrepreneurial Voice, and we are broadcasting live today in downtown L.A. at skidrowstudios.com, and we are Real Radio on the Internet, and we're here every Tuesday at 11 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, and we're here to talk about entrepreneurship and all of the great things about it and some of the struggles that you might have about it and share tips and business lessons and also be able to talk to our guests and find out what their journey was. But we'd also love to hear from our audience as well. So if you're listening and you'd like to call in, you can reach us at 1-800-893-9562. And we'd love to hear from you. So today I am talking to Amanda, and she is the founder of Aunt V's Aura Spray. And I first learned about her when I went I can't even remember the place now, but I went and I saw her sprays. I was asked to pick my color, and I saw her sprays, and I totally fell in love with them. And so I'm very excited to have her here today to share her story and tell us more about who she is and the sprays that she has. So hi, Amanda, and welcome.
Hello.
So tell us what you have, what your product is, and how you got, let's talk a little bit about your journey, about how you got started here.
Well, I started a product line that was based in color. And the way I came up with color was through several years of being interested in psychological healing, aromatherapy, flower essences, crystals, Reiki, you know, all the new age kind of woo-woo sort of stuff. And I got into this when I was pretty young, probably like 18 or 19, just anything that had to do with healing, herbs, nutrition, bettering the self.
Fantastic. I'm going to show your product too, because These are so exquisite. The colors are just stunning and gorgeous. And here, I've got one more. Let's see if I can hold them all up at the same time. All right. So, and you've got more, but
yeah, there's 15 different colors.
Just a few of my absolute favorites. So thank you.
Okay. Yeah. You know, I was a young mother and I was modeling and doing commercial work and stuff like that. And as the years went on, I was like, holy cow, how am I going to, you know, support myself? And, you know, through the years, and I came up with this idea. I stirred it around for probably a few years, just like, I want to do this. I'd draw things out. I'd, you know, come up with names and logos. And it was kind of a dream. And then one day, a friend of mine, actually a mentor, said she knew someone that was looking to invest in an aromatherapy line. And I had the chutzpah to really kind of go after them and convince them. And they originally invested like $40,000. And with that, I secured a lease on a store. And I, you know, did some legal work and had enough money to get labels and products. And I kind of, you know, started just with that 40 grand with also the guy that originally invested in me was of great help kind of guiding me. He'd say, okay, with this 5,000, do this, with this 10,000, do this. And looking back, it was, you know, an incredible learning experience. Like just simple things like making labels was, you know,
a big deal,
daunting, along with finding bottles and just everything that went along with it. But, you know, through the years, this was all kind of came to fruition in 1999. So I guess I've been in business for 15 years now, which is amazing. And it has been pretty steady and grows. And I have a really loyal clientele, which, you know, I really, those are the people that have kept me in business at times, because I have three kids, I homeschool them. They're my main priority. So luckily my customers they've been my encouragement to stay in business because they love my product so much.
So did you grow up with this interest? Did you have an idea that at some point, oh, this is what I want to do? Or what were you thinking when you were small about entrepreneurship at all? Mm-hmm. Did you have come from a family of entrepreneurs? Or
I do. Both my mother and my stepfather have always been entrepreneurs. They started, this is funny, when my mom met my stepdad, he was a square dance caller. And she was working at Braille Institute, and somehow they were doing like square dances for blind people. And then she started a little small boutique that she would set up at the dance halls, you know, so they'd have like a Saturday night dance. And she started just with like a little corner of the place, and she started getting some dresses and shoes and, you know, costume sort of dance stuff. And then that turned into them renting a hall and setting up a whole shop in there, and they would rent that space out to other dancers and weddings and stuff like that. And then eventually they let go of the dance hall, and they had like two or three different Western square dance style stores in California. And then they took it to Arizona, and now to this day they still do it, but it's like been honed into shoes, and they manufacture shoes for ballroom dancers.
Wow. And that's very popular these days, isn't it?
Yeah. But I've,
You watch them take just a little dream and start small and grow it big. So you knew that the possibilities out there existed. So were you afraid, or did you just kind of rely on the fact that I'm passionate about this and I'm going to make it?
I wasn't afraid. I mean, mostly because the way I grew up, it's like entrepreneurship is a way of life. Mm-hmm. You're doing it while you're cooking dinner.
Yeah.
You know, our garage was full of sewing machines, and, you know, it was just kind of always happening.
Yeah, I grew up that way too. Mm-hmm. So yeah. I understand. A lot of entrepreneurs do feel very afraid, though, to leave a very secure, what they may deem secure position, and then, you know, take that leap. And so I love that it was just organic for you. It was organic for your mom and stepfather, and you were able to live it, breathe it, and see how it evolves.
So. Yeah. I mean, I think for us, the drive was really like survival. Like, what am I, you know?
Well, often it is.
Yeah. So I think there's a difference in someone that's working a regular job and they want to take the leap into entrepreneurship. I haven't done that. I was more like, I got to put food on the table. What am I going to do?
Well,
versus leaving a corporate job or something.
Yeah, but I actually tell all entrepreneurs, I mean, you've got to stay hungry. You've got to be hungry because you need that drive. A lot of times, especially when the going gets tough, you know, if you don't have that why and you don't have that drive, then it's going to be very difficult for you to keep this going just because it seemed kind of fun, right?
Yeah, absolutely, especially, you know, the first 5 years have to, it's like having a baby.
Takes a lot of work.
Yeah. 7 days a week, you know, all day, all night, whether it's actual work or worrying or,
yeah, exactly.
You know, figuring out how you're going to cover the rent or, you know.
And you never turn it off. And there's a lot of responsibility and obligations there, whether it's having a store and having to pay the rent for that, or whether it's accountability to your customers or any of those things. And then, yeah, it may be to pay the mortgage. It may be to put food on the table, whatever it is. But
yeah, and it's a learning experience. So the longer you do it, the more you learn, the better you get at it, the more you trust. Like now I recognize the waves of business, and I think this is true probably for most small businesses anyways, is that you have busy periods and then you have slow periods. And I think that a lot of entrepreneurs like get really scared during the slow periods.
Mm-hmm.
And over the years, I've learned to just know that any minute, you know, right after a slow period, you know, 10 orders could come in one day. And, you know, it's really like the ocean coming in and out. And it starts to make sense. It starts to have a pattern.
Well, you said something else, too, that I think is important. So you had this idea. And you wanted to put this out there, but a lot of times people keep those ideas under wraps. Like, oh my gosh, I don't want to share this idea because somebody's going to take it. Mm-hmm. And so you had to actually share that idea a bit to even find the person that said, oh, I can help you. Mm-hmm. I know an investor. I know someone who can help you with this. Now, did you already have all of your product, your formulations, your recipes and all of that before you launched? When you met up with your investor?
I had a lot of it. I was able to present them with, you know, a line, like I would make this product and that product, and this is what it's called, this is what's in it, this is what it does, this is what AntVise is about, which was not only is it an aromatherapy, body care sort of product, but it's something that improves your life, like, because I really formulate the products to work in the psychological and spiritual and mental and emotional realms. So that was like the core of what we were going to be about. And they also were on a spiritual path, so it really made sense for them. You know, that relationship kind of sizzled and we ended on good terms. But I think they were more money driven, where I was very passion and product driven and was happier maybe with less money coming in initially, where they wanted to go much bigger.
Right. Well, one of the things I really love too, what, of course, obviously the thing I fell in love with was the colors. They're so vibrant. They're so amazing. And I loved being able to connect because one of the things we haven't really talked about is the product itself in detail. But I absolutely loved the colors. And then you've named each product. Some of them are like the oranges, enlightenment. And the turquoise is creativity and flow. And you can really relate to that. But the other thing that's so important to your brand is your packaging. And I just feel like you totally nailed it. I mean, you can't even look at these without falling in love with them. So the colors are just so rich and exquisite. Now, did you originally start out with the color?
Yes. Yeah. I was working with a woman who was using color therapy in her practice. And she was selling a product that was a lot more expensive, harder to get. Kind of, you had to jump through hoops. You had to pay for a consultation, all this sort of thing. And I was absolutely in love with this product. And I thought, how can I make something like this that's just easy? Easy for people to buy, easy for people to use. You know, not a $500 investment, you know. And I, you know, I was young and I was, this product is really born out of passion. I mean, I just loved it.
Well, I love it. That's why I have you on today, because I saw this and I just totally fell in love with it. And I actually did a retreat, as you know, but our listeners don't know, I did a retreat a couple of weeks ago up in Sonoma, and one of our workshops was all about color. And so we were able to experience your product, and it was just amazing. And as soon as I saw this product, I thought, I've got to have this. I've got to have this up there. I've got to share this with everybody else. And that's really what, you know, that's part of marketing anyway, is just having a product that's so amazing that everybody wants to share it. So I love it that you fell in love with something similar and that you came out and created your own. So what was behind, like, how did you come up with your names? How did you even decide which colors to choose? And did you have to do a lot of research for that? And tell us about who, and I said the wrong name. I was pronouncing it wrong, but tell us who AntVise is.
Okay. Well, at the time, I had one of my biggest blessings in my life is that I lived in my great aunt's house for about 11 years. And she was in a nursing home, and she had lived in this home her whole life, and she was a spiritualist and a medium, and she was a very interesting, eccentric type of woman. And so I was sitting in my backyard one day, and I was just like, what am I going to name this company? And I really wanted to honor the blessing I had in my life to be living there, which really allowed me to start my business, too, because I didn't have rent and all that sort of thing. And so I was just tossing around names, and then I was looking at other companies at the time. There was a company named Neil's Yard that came out of England that I really liked at the time. And so I was kind of playing off that garden yard. And so originally it was called AntVise Garden. And so the AntVise came from my great aunt because I was living in her big magical house at the time, which was a muse for me. It was kind of a even, you know, a playground of sorts. You know, it didn't make sense that I was this, you know, young girl in this big house with this little kid. And, you know, it was, so I named it after her, and I liked it because it had, for me, she symbolizes all of those things, you know, the spiritual aspect. She was also like a single successful woman for her generation, which I thought was neat and rare at the time. It just made sense to name it after her. I didn't want to name it after me like a man does or something. That seemed, didn't seem magical enough.
Well, I think it's magical. I think it's great. So how many, you have 15 now, right? 15?
Yeah, I have colors? These colors, and then I also have oils. I'm always recreating new products. I had a lot more products when I was doing the store, but I have found that when I moved to online in 06, we lost our lease there on Melrose, and I had a 6-month-old, and I was looking at new space, and it was, you know, quadruple what I was paying, and I had gotten married, and, you know, the need for money became less important. So at the time when I closed my store, I didn't really know what was going to happen.
And that was really the boom of online as well in terms of sales and all of that kind of stuff.
Yeah. So I just kind of went with it. Luckily, I wasn't in a desperate situation. And one of my biggest accounts called me for the first time saying they wanted to introduce my product on their first gift, daily gift or something. I forget. They were going to do like a gift shop, DeLeom, it's called, DeLeom.com.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So they called me and they were launching their gift shop and they said, we want to start with your product. And they did really well with it and they still do really well with it to this day. So that was kind of a lucky thing that they started carrying my product because they have a huge audience. And so every week an email was going out to their members, you know, advertising my product. So that was kind of like free advertising. I really look at any time, you know, those daily specials and stuff, they do that kind of stuff. It's instead of paying for advertising, you can do stuff like that. And then, you know, it's they have your specific customer.
Sure.
And, you know, it just all worked out. And through them, other stores found us. And then I have a lot of customers that were loyal from the store. You know, but it spreads when you get your stuff out there.
Right.
And so we went from like a retail to wholesale.
So when you were retail, did you have wholesale customers as well?
A few, but not like now.
So you just kind of switched that and really started concentrating on that, although you have your online store as well.
Yes.
And that really allowed you to expand your market. Mm-hmm. In addition to that.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. It was like when we first got the first DeLeom order, I think it was like, I don't know, it was like 2,000 pieces I was going to need to get out within.
So you had a lot of boxes,
you know, a couple
to pack.
Days. I'd never done that before because I'd, you know, stock my shelves. I'd have, you know, maybe 20 max made at one time. So I just did it. I did it in my garage. I hired a friend and we just made aura sprays straight for a couple of days and pumped them out. And through that process, I just got really good at it. And now, you know, I just repeat that. And
do you do the manufacturing yourself or do you
sub that out? I do all of it.
And do you have a place in, are you still out of your garage?
I am.
I think that's awesome.
Yeah. I've tried to move it to a lab. I've done tests. You know, done samples and labs, and every time I'd get a product back, it just didn't have the same effect. Mm-hmm. And AmpVise it's like chicken soup, the difference between chicken soup from the grocery store versus chicken soup from your grandmother's kitchen. It had that similar feeling to me, and this is the kind of product that's what it's about, is it's a feel-good product. So,
and it's so authentic, and so many people try and capture that and be that, but it's really hard. And I know exactly what you're talking about in terms of, yeah, you can give someone your recipe, but that doesn't mean it's going to come back the same way. And I love knowing that you put that a little extra, whatever it is, that little extra magic in this spray.
Yeah.
That's going to make it even more powerful to me now, knowing that.
Yeah, no, I make my own crystal infusions, and I don't know what it is, but I've just learned that I need to do it, and that's how they hold the energy.
I think so. I agree. My dad used to make a salad, and it was the most simple salad in the world. I mean, lettuce, tomato, and mayonnaise, mm-hmm. I think. Maybe a touch of salt and pepper or sugar. But it was so good. And I used to say, what's in it? What's so special about it? And he said, it's got that special ingredient. And he said, it's love. And so I really feel like that's exactly what's going into your sprays. And I love knowing that you put these together yourself, you know, with that special magic energy. That's really great.
Yeah, and it's been good. It's I've just gotten good at kind of producing them fast. I can, you know, I could easily kind of replicate that. We're always kind of ready. Like, what if we need more? I could do what I'm doing now. I'd have to hire some people, but I would set up my own manufacturing for sure. Continue the way I'm doing it now.
And that's an important thing to note. And even with my last guest that we just had, you do want to be and need to be prepared. Not that you have to hire a staff of 100, but you have to be prepared in the event that, say, Oprah has you on her show and all of a sudden you've got an order that will cause you to, you know, could the normal person to shut down operations because they can't fulfill all of those orders, you know, being prepared that at the ready, if something like that does come in, that you're able to move forward and accommodate that kind of a request. And so I think it's great that you just said that, yeah, if I need to, I'm totally capable of doing that. But that's not how you have to set up your operation on a day-to-day. And you've also, a very important component is putting those systems in place that allow you to multiply your workload.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I always am thinking big picture. I have my entrepreneur gurus that I, you know, have learned from over the years. And I'm definitely always thinking big picture, and then at the same time, staying authentic. I made a decision years ago after the lab test that I was going to grow organically versus, you know, really trying to push it.
Mm-hmm.
And that was from experience of knowing the type of customer that loves my product and, you know, needing it to work. I mean, the product needs to work. People aren't going to buy it if it doesn't work. So that was a choice that I was faced with at one point because I did have interest to go big.
Yeah.
And I chose to stay the way we are now.
And just, yeah, I think it's great and love that that was a conscious decision as well. So when you first came up with this idea that I'm going to create these sprays, who were you going to for advice? Did you do a business plan? You didn't go to school for entrepreneurship and understand. I mean, you had your parents, but where did you go to for advice to go ahead and take that step? Because a lot of people have ideas, a lot of people have dreams, but they don't take that next step.
Mm-hmm. Well, like I said, the first guy that invested, he was kind of fatherly in a way. With his direction.
But you had to have it all going on. I mean, you had to present that. You had to have something to convince him that this was a viable product. Mm-hmm. And especially, and I want to talk about this a little bit later, especially because of the fact that this is a niche product. It's not a product that someone has to have in order to survive.
Right, right.
Well,
you know?
Well, maybe they need it to survive.
I think it's just like maybe a personality type or, you know, confidence, chutzpah. I mean, like I said, I was really, really into this stuff, hardcore. Even before I started this, I worked at a little boutique where I was doing this, and you know, it felt really natural to me at the time.
So even putting together a presentation, how did you know how to do that?
I didn't really. I just took my papers in and my drawings and a few little sample products and myself and went for it.
I see, and that's so important because a lot of people think that they do have to have the whole business plan and the slick slideshow and the all of those different things. And in some cases, maybe that's true. But have you ever watched Shark Tank?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the people who actually get their products out there are the ones who come in with the most passion. And that's really what they're buying is the passion. And I'm sure with your investor, that's really what they tapped into. So you, having worked in a boutique that was selling similar type of products, you had an idea. You knew that this was a possibility that could work. Did you really think in terms of like, who is my ideal customer and how do I find them? And even in choosing your location, saying, okay, well, this is where the biggest segment of my customer is. And so therefore, it should work.
You know, it was really sort of coincidental or Celestine prophecy or whatever word you want to put on it, but it kind of all came together at the right time. The space, originally we weren't even going to do the store. We were just going to do the products. And then this little tiny space came up in a chiropractic office that had a front door to Melrose Ave right across the street from Bodhi Tree.
Oh, perfect.
You know, yeah. Right down the street from Elixir. They're not there anymore, nor is Bodhi Tree, across from Earth Cafe. Mm-hmm. So I really couldn't have landed in a better place. So that was all coincidental. It just kind of all lined up. And that's kind of what the whole brand is about, is creating that kind of flow in your life where things
are... So it wasn't by accident.
Yeah, I don't think so. You know, it was, you know, it just all came together. But like I said, I had the idea for probably 3 years or more brewing and drawing, and I'd put it in the drawer. I'd take it out. I'd put, you know, it was there. And then when the opportunity came, I jumped on it. And I had stuff to show.
Yeah.
And I had people that liked me that referred me to people and, you know, that sort of thing.
That's great. Now, how do you come up with all of the names? Because these are... It's interesting because people really gravitate, at least I saw at the retreat that I just put on, you know, they really gravitated first to the color and then to the name, like the creativity and flow or energy and grounding or enlightenment or protection and intuition.
Well, all of those names are what the color does.
Okay.
So that was... kind of easy. I mean, I had to hone in the word and pick, you know, I could probably put 20 words with each color.
Right.
So I picked ones that I thought were universal, that people would gravitate to. I've changed some. I changed my labeling, I don't know, maybe four or five years ago. And a couple of the names changed. Like yellow used to be joy and bliss. I changed it to happiness. Just at the time, happiness was like a buzzword.
Especially a buzzword now with, what is that song?
Yeah, exactly. And I changed the orange from, that used to be creativity and wisdom. And I changed it to enlightenment because I originally started with 8 colors and then I expanded to the 15. So when I brought in the gold and the coral and some of the other oranges, you know, the meaning of them expanded because they all kind of hold similar, qualities,
right,
with intricate differences based on the chakras. And
so these are not just colors though, and they're not just cool names that I gravitate towards, like I want more creativity and flow in my life. These all smell so good.
Thank you.
And they have different ingredients in each one.
Yeah, they are made of pure essential oils. There's no artificial fragrance whatsoever. And the way I formulated them was I kind of went against typical rules of aromatherapy. I don't even really know what those are. So I came at it really free without any rules and regulations, which there are a lot of.
I was just going to ask about that. Okay.
With top notes and middle notes and things they do in the fragrance industry. But I wasn't creating them necessarily to be smells that would be perfumes or things that people would necessarily love. I was more interested in what they were going to do for for the person. So I formulated them to work, and in return, they have really unique and different smells. Each blend of oils is based on the color and specific qualities that it might have, like the indigo one that you love. I really wanted that one to be good for what they call indigo children, which are kind of new age kids. They're your typical kids that can't sit still, or kids on the spectrum, or, you know, kind of these mystical kids, techie kids. You know, sometimes they get labeled ADHD or something like that. So I looked up oils that were good for hyperactivity. And one of them was cedarwood that had the most scientific proof to like calm kids down and help them focus and stuff. So I used that in the indigo spray because to me it was corresponding to the part of the brain to calm it down and focus, which is the third eye. So I did a lot of research on each color and, you know, what it was going to do.
Yeah.
You know, as far as the elements and vibrations and all that sort of stuff.
Well, I love all of the thought that goes into your product, and I'm not going to say the need for perfection, although that may very well be in there, but the need for everything to be authentic and exquisite and purposeful and such a have such an effect on several of the different senses, whether it's the visual or the smell, and just the overall feeling that you have with the bottle of spray. I mean, it's like some of the women just wanted to carry the spray around with them. Can I just take this back to my table and hold on to it?
Yeah, so. It can be used like that. It's, you know, it's almost like holding a crystal or something because they are energetic and they do work on that level as well. If you were just holding it or carrying it in your purse, the red one that you were holding is specific for entrepreneurs. Red is manifestation and willpower and groundedness and survival. You know, it's the typical like red woman in the red dress. She's powerful, or woman with the red purse.
It's funny that I should have picked this one to bring today because red is normally not my color. I stay away from it. But I'm going to start embracing it into my life more now. So I really did want to take time to, I do want to share what your website is. It's www.antvis.com. And if anyone wants to call in, we'd love to hear from you. The number is 1-800-893-9562. If you have a question for myself or Amanda, we're happy to answer your questions. But to continue on, tell me about, were you worried at all that this is such a niche market? And how did you reconcile with that, knowing that it's not a product? I mean, some people make a product and it's like, I want one of these in every person's hand. Mm-hmm. I mean, what I'm making is going to revolutionize the world and right. Everybody has to have one. Now, I agree that everybody should have one, but it is a niche market. And so how did you reconcile that?
Mm-hmm. Well, when I first started, I was innocent and new enough that I just was going for it. I'm going to do this and it's going to be good. And, you know, I had a lot of, I guess the only word would be confidence. But over the years, one of the people that writes books and stuff that really has inspired me is this guy named Seth Godin. Mm-hmm. Do you know who he
is?
Yeah,
I do. Absolutely.
And he's written a lot of books for small business people and the web and how to do business on the web and, you know, customer service and that sort of thing. And I forget which book it was, but he talked a lot about niche marketing and how the web is, you know, you have the whole world at your fingertips. So instead of just relying in my store where I'm dependent on people in the local area to be into my products,
right,
suddenly I have the whole world that I can tap into to be into my products.
It takes on a whole new set of challenges because you have to find them.
Absolutely. And if I just, the choices I've made have been niche in the sense that I'm thinking about those customers. I'm not thinking about the whole world. I'm thinking about people that like to do magic, that are into psychology, into healing, you know, the same people. And so I think that's what makes it a niche product, is that it's almost like you have a tribe of people out there. And, you know, I stay true to those people, because most people I tell about this, they, you know, they don't get it. They're, you know, don't understand it. Even in my daily life now, a lot of people don't even know that I do this, because I, you know, it's like a niche thing. It's my own special little Idaho that I've learned not to try to mass sell it to people. I don't like hard selling.
No, I don't either.
It's a turn off, especially with this sort of product.
Right. Well, I think this product kind of sells itself. I'll sell it for you, because I told you I love it. How did you deal with the naysayers?
Well, most people that came into the store were diehards and kind of had a cult following. But there were, you know, people that would come in and want to confront me and be, well, how does this work? And, you know, I just kind of was like, I'm here for the people that are into this, and I'm not trying to convince you of the power of vibrations and vibes and space. It's just something that you'd have to be into.
Did you have people, when you were first launching this, say, that's never going to fly?
No. No, I don't surround myself with those kind of people.
Good. Good. I like that. And I think that's some really great advice, to just ignore or don't surround yourself with those kinds of people. Although sometimes when people say that, sometimes it's not because they're, you know, they just don't like you, or they really just can't see it. It's more that they're coming from their own fears. You know, so it sometimes does come from a place of love,
sure,
that they're worried for you. You know, worried that you may be launching into something, because they don't understand that. And I think it does take a tremendous amount of belief in yourself and in your product, and especially if you've done a little bit of homework. Now, do you think it was to your advantage that you were young and naive?
Yes.
Would you start it today? Would you do the same thing? Would you do it the same way?
Probably not.
What would you do different?
I'd probably do something totally different.
Do you mind sharing why that would be? Has the journey been harder? Has it, you know, for what?
No, I'm an entrepreneur at heart. I'll always have my own business. I think that this product line was born out of a tremendous amount of passion and love, like I told you before. You know, as I've gotten older, it's become more of a lifestyle rather than something that I'm aggressively learning about and hungry for, because now it's more part of me. So if I were to start something today, I don't really know what it would be. I mean, I'm with Aunt Buys, and that's my business, and it's what I do, but it's much more natural now. It doesn't have this, it's just different. I don't have the almost desperation to find something. It's mm-hmm. there.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it does. It does. And sometimes we don't know what that next thing is. And actually, you are continuing to create, like you said. Now you've got the oils and you've got some other products. And so it is continually evolving.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So do you think about, and I'm not trying to be personal, but I think it's also important to know that people love to hear the journey and what your thoughts are in helping them to just kind of even understand their own. But do you think many companies are built to sell at some point? Some
mm-hmm.
companies are, others, I would never sell it. I'm going to pass it down to the next generation, and
right.
hopefully they'll pass it down to the generation after that. Do you mind sharing what your thoughts are about that? Like, when you built it, did you have any thoughts about it, about an exit strategy at some point? Do you now?
I have ideas. I I think about taking Aunt Buys into a lifestyle brand, you know, where we're more of like a marketplace where we also sell other products that would go hand in hand, building, you know, more around what we already have. You know, it's a big vision for me and my husband, who is my partner. He became my partner when Aunt Buys was maybe a few years old. So he's been a very important, we would not be here today without him, piece. I mean, the one piece of advice that I would give new entrepreneurs is to have a team. And whether that's your husband or your dad or your brother or someone that can handle the business side. I'm not good at that. I was good enough to start it, but there's a lot of different pieces that go with that. And I think one of the things entrepreneurs do is that they think they can do everything.
Especially women think that.
Yeah. And there's a book called The E-Myth that talks about that. So at one point we became aware of that. And so I decided I'm going to purely focus on the product, making the product, customer service, and just, he's going to do all the other stuff, the taxes, the bills, like that stuff takes away from my creativity.
Well, I agree with that 100%. And it is really great advice to share with other entrepreneurs, because when you're focusing on the things that, A, you either don't like or you don't know, there are mistakes made. We tend to procrastinate. We tend to get overwhelmed, and it takes away our passion, and it takes away our desire to actually do. I think most entrepreneurs, although certainly we want to make money, and certainly we may need to make money, and certainly we want it to be successful. But I think, and especially for women, they launch a business from a place of pain or passion, and so whenever you're having to focus on all of these things that are really distasteful or uncomfortable or not part of what the reason we started this whole thing in the beginning, then you can certainly lose interest in it, and it tends to not be as successful. And what we really need to focus on is what our genius work is. And that really does allow for the growth and the creativity.
Oh, absolutely. It's essential. So, and I think it's something that probably every entrepreneur learns as they go along, you know, and it's hard to find people you trust. You know, I've had a handful of, you know, relationships go sour.
Sure.
Over business, over, you know, different.
It happens. It totally happens. And, and we're not always in alignment with each other, and their interests grow or their interests change or their ego gets involved in, you know, in whatever it is. So I love your advice that having a team, finding a team that works, and it'd be very unusual if you came out of the chute completely lucky with the perfect team and the perfect everything from day one. I mean, there's always going to be challenges, but learning how to communicate and to work through those and divide and conquer is critical, very important.
Yeah, it's key. It's a key element. My husband is the person that really wants to take it. He's a major entrepreneur. You know, this is his baby. He's always holding on to it, saying, you know, and I'm ready. You know, Aunt Buys is our baby, you know, and really has been the foundation of learning about businesses. And, you know, he has a lot of different businesses that have grown from running this business. And so, you know, it's really a way of life is how I see it. And, you know, for me, it's a small business, but at the same time, I make enough money if I were working a regular job.
Yeah.
So that to me is just totally amusing at times, because it's become so easy and part of my life that I'm just tickled.
Yeah, well, that's awesome. You know, that's what we all shoot for, right?
Yeah.
To make some money doing something we love.
Yeah. So when it's not necessarily being bought by some big corporation and I'm becoming like a multimillionaire, but it's like I have a job and it's my own business and I live a really nice life.
Well, everybody has different goals, and I think honoring those is very important as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that's great. Now, how old are your kids? Are they involved?
Yeah, they are. They're 8, 10, and 22.
Oh, fantastic.
So, my 22-year-old was in kindergarten when I started Aunt Vi's.
Wow.
He was really the catalyst because I needed to take care of him to do something.
Right.
You know, and I was purely creative person. That was the other thing I wanted to mention when we were talking about the business skills is that a lot of creative people, most probably don't have the, is it the left brain or right? The left brain skills. You know, some do, you can learn them and stuff like that. But it's just so great to bring a creative person together with a, you know, logically minded person.
Absolutely.
It's just a key element, I think.
That's great. Now, is he your oldest? Is he involved in the business too?
No, he's involved in his own life and, you know, but it's part of...
But he certainly grew up with it, yes.
Absolutely. I mean, I'm raising my kids to think like entrepreneurs, mm-hmm. and if I was going to be promoting anything in their life, it will be to start their own business and, you know, be creative and do something that will allow them to have the life they want, whether they're working all the time or living a simpler life and having a business that, you know, brings in enough money to, you know, do what they want to do.
Well, I think it's very important. So the skills that you're really giving them are so fantastic. I mean, you almost wish that every employee would have to take an entrepreneurship class or something just so they could really understand where their employer's coming from. And so you teaching them those kind of skills, the entrepreneurship skills, is just only really going to prepare them so well with whatever it is that they're going to do, whether they work for someone or go out on their own.
Absolutely.
It'll be great for them.
Yeah, we have family night watching Shark Tank. And we talk about it. And we talk about Aunt Vi's and what we think. And they help me, you know, when I have orders, they help me package it up. They wrap things up. You know, they're very much part of it because, like I said, it's part of my life. I'm doing it while I'm doing my other stuff. It's all interwoven.
Well, one of the questions that I sometimes ask is, how do you measure success? And I think throughout this interview, you've been very true to what you think success is. But if you could put that into words, more specifically, what would you say?
Well, for me, success is, you know, I love seeing my amount of money I've made at the end of the year. Like I told you, I'm always tickled. I can't wrap my mind around, you know, that many people bought Oris Sprays. So that is one form of success. You know, living a life that makes me happy and helping other people. I mean, I think it depends on, you know, I don't have this hardcore drive to be a, you know, heavy duty business person, but I do have a drive to help people. I love to help people. So if I can do that and support myself, that would be success for me.
Yeah, no, even when you were talking about the fact that, yes, you could farm this out, you could sub it out, have other people make it, you could grow bigger that way, but that takes away from what your product actually is.
Yeah.
So, and unless you could find a way to capture that extra bit of magic, then that's not what's important to you. So,
yeah.
And no, it's good to know where you stand on that.
Well, that's what I meant when I said I made a decision to grow organically,
because mm-hmm.
I forget where I read. I was like, you know, you can choose to grow organically and depend on your customer base, word of mouth, and just slowly evolve. Or you can go for the big splash and, you know, work like crazy. I didn't want to work like crazy anymore. I have kids. I want to.
Right. Enjoy.
Yeah.
Enjoy all aspects of life.
Yeah. I'm a stay-at-home mom that has a good small business.
But I do want to clarify, you have a good small business. It's not a hobby. It's a business.
Absolutely.
And that's important to note, because sometimes we can, I don't want to get into the whole discussion of how we can have it all or whatever, but you've made choices so that you can still have a life and a lifestyle and a business that's important and vibrant and still growing and successful.
Oh, absolutely. And I think there's a lot of women, especially moms, you know, who have great ideas. Like, you know, I know people that sell a lot of stuff on Etsy, and, you know, there's a lot of ways to do this and to, you know, still be living kind of the mom life that you're choosing to live or that Sure. you think is important. And then also have some income coming in, doing something that you love, that your kids are learning from, that you make. I mean, the whole maker movement and making your own stuff, and, you know, Aunt Vi's fits right into there.
Well, you're a great role model for your children and for other women who are looking to see how they might be able to do something that taps into their passion, but still allows them to be respected and to respect themselves and to have something that can move forward and be successful as well. Now, what inspires you every day? How do you, I've got to get up and do this. Is it because there's an order waiting in the inbox, or?
Yeah.
It's hard. I mean, when you work out of your home or garage, or, you know, there's no one saying, oh, you have to be there at 9 o'clock a.m.
Yeah. No, it takes a lot of self-discipline. And like I said, it's become part of my life, our life. It's set up like right now when I walked out the door, I, you know, in the middle of bottling bottles on my big table. You know, I'll go home, I'll fix it up, get it boxed up. You know, it's an ongoing process. But yeah, when the orders are there, I really believe in customer service. So I always try to get orders out the same day or the next day. I'm always ready to fill orders. I always have enough bottles, enough sprayers, enough labels. It's always ready to go. And that, you know, that has come with time and experience, you know, having the money to invest in the supplies.
Having the systems in place.
Absolutely. So, you know, I have it. It's, you know, if it's there, you're doing it. If you got to go do this, you go do that. It's just one of the many things that has to happen that day.
Yeah.
It's all.
All part of
working
the,
together.
Yeah, all part of the process. All pulling together. Do you have a motto that you live by?
You know, my main motto is, don't get in my way. Probably. I like to do things my way. You know, I don't like authority figures or people telling me the right way to do things. And I think that attitude has helped me create the life and business that works for me.
Well, I think that's great. That kind of ties into coloring outside the lines and thinking outside the box and not paying attention to the rules.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Because if we're always just following the rules, like you said, even whenever you created your sprays, if there were rules for Aura sprays, you just...
Yeah, they'd smell like every other product on the market.
Right. So that's what's really helped to lead you to where you are today. So I like that a lot. Kind of goes along with what would your best advice that you would give to an entrepreneur starting today?
It would be to be creative, do something different. Don't follow the rules, because then you're just replicating. It's like even with cooking, it's, you know, I use a lot of recipes for cooking. But my best cooking is usually when I don't use a recipe. I take all the knowledge that I have and technique or whatever, and then I create something that's mine. And I think, you know, if you create something that's truly unique, that comes from all of the knowledge or wisdom that you've attained, and you create something that's new and different, that people really want it, you know? I think a lot of businesses copy and it's scary for someone like me. I could have come in it, and it did creep in, like, oh, I'm going to create these products, and then someone could come in and with a lot of money and just do it better than me and, you know, take my idea, and then I'm just going to be left in the ashes type of thing. You kind of have to let go of that fear, and just know that if something like that happens, you're going to create something else.
That's right.
You know, right.
And, well, you are uniquely you, and it's hard to duplicate that, that unique special sauce that you have or recipe. I want to thank you so much, Amanda, for being a part of our show today and sharing your journey with us and your tips and advice. And I look forward to talking to you more and seeing you again. And I will continue to be using your sprays.
The red, especially.
The red, especially. Yes, now. Energy and grounding. Thank you.
Thank you.